Get ready to jump off sides. We're going to get you with the hard count.
My boy's waiting, smile.
Here's your host.
Get the gum out of your ears and listen up.
Andrew Garda.
I'm friggin' velvety smooth.
And here we go.
That's right, folks. It's another edition of the Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda. Welcome to CheeseheadTV.com's NFL podcast, or as I like to call it, a voice of sanity in an island of cheeseheads. That's right, folks. I am the one person here at CheeseheadTV.com who is not relentlessly Packer-loving. I do enjoy the Packers. I like the Packers, and I do like cheese. But no, you get your NFL news and notes here on this show. Of course, you can always get my stuff on CheeseheadTV.com, my From the Press Box, which you may have noticed is a little bit late. We'll talk about that a little bit later. I know I'm probably grounded. And you can also catch my stuff at footballguys.com for your fantasy football needs. If you're not a subscriber, you should be. If you aren't, I'll tell you what, guys, you should be next year. 50,000 pages of great content, and half of them seem to be mine right now. You can also catch my stuff over at bleacherreport.com. I do NFL and fantasy football takes, and I have a couple articles this week on some injuries, and I'm going to be doing a I Miss John Madden article for Friday, so check that out as well. Lots of stuff to go to. It's possible we will have a super secret guest later on. I'm not going to spoil the surprise because, frankly, right now we haven't gotten to the point where we've actually scheduled it. We kind of have it murky out there, so we'll see. If that does not come to fruition, then I'm just going to cover what I was going to cover with that person anyway, but we've got a ton of stuff to talk about. Santonio Holmes, not happy or happy with the New York Jets. His production, not what it has been. We'll talk a little bit about that. We will also cover a new idea that officials are going to be looking for concussions. That's right, folks. The guys who can't get a first down right, the ones who can't call a touchdown properly, they're going to be deciding whether someone has a concussion or not. We'll talk about that as well. We'll talk about the Minnesota Vikings and how they are concerned about their stadium situation. Hello, Los Angeles. And we will also talk about the magical sack of John Beck. And finally, we're going to talk a little bit about some running backs, one of which those of you who are NFC North fans will be very well acquainted with, who don't have contracts right now and what that may mean the rest of the season and the offseason. So a lot of stuff to go to. We'll also talk a little bit of Tim Tebow because it's just not stopping with him. We were going to talk a little bit about his game. I promised in the From the Press Box article that I would talk about his game tonight. We'll also touch on what I touched on there, which is the Tebowing phenomenon. So, like I said, lots of stuff to do. We got about an hour to kill here, folks. Strap it on. Settle in. Here we go. And of course, like I said, we were a little bit late with this show and a little bit late with From the Press Box this week. I apologize. I'd like to blame it on the freakish snowstorm that we had here in the East. I'd like to blame it on Halloween. I'd like to blame it on almost anything. But the fact is, Tuesday night, I decided I was going to move the From the Press Box to the Tuesday night because I've got some articles for Bleacher Report, football guys, stuff like that, that's just kind of backing up. And I don't want to have to rush out and just sort of throw out From the Press Box. I want that to be a good article. I want it to be its own thing and not be a completely stressful experience. So I said, I'll do it on Tuesday nights. Fantastic. And normally I could do a hard count like right after or right before that. In this particular case, I was backlogged. So I said to Aaron, hey, boss man, I don't know if you guys are doing transplants Wednesday night, but I would like to do the hard count this week on Wednesday night. He said, doesn't matter. Go for it. By the way, if you have not had a chance to check out the new Packers transplants, I definitely download it on the iTunes feed, but go check out the recording on CheeseheadTV.com. They're in the live stream studios, and I have to tell you, I'm hella jealous. That's right, I went 80s on you. Hella jealous I am. Very sharp-looking studio. I still am always sad when Nagler doesn't have the fancy hat. I understand his wife got rid of the fancy hat. I believe they burned it, but I would like to get him a fancy hat for Christmas if I was pretty sure that the wife wasn't going to burn that as well. And, of course, he and Corey, I stopped by before I recorded this podcast to check it out. Great-looking studio, great sound. The boys look good. So I know that most of you listening to this are probably not Packer fans. regardless, check out the show. The two of them know their football, first of all, or they like to think they do, but they do. Even though it's Packer-centric, they do a lot of other good stuff. They've had Roger Goodell on there. They've had Mike Lombardi. They have a lot of. They've had some dude named Andrew Garda on occasion. He's pretty good. But great stuff over there. Check it out. But congratulations on the new studio, on the live stream studio launch. And so I checked that out a little bit earlier. But Aaron said, you know, whatever. Just record the hard count. We'll put it up whenever it gets done. So I decided I would do it Wednesday night. So I sat down to do From the Press Box last night, and about 5 minutes before I was really ready to go, which means I was done reading web comics on the internet, my internet went kablooey and went down and did not come back up. So I did From the Press Box, secretly at work where nobody was looking, and then now I'm doing this tonight. So hopefully we'll have no internet issues this evening or here going forward. We changed the time Warner because we had Verizon, and Verizon Blue kept going out on us. And so far, time Warner's been pretty good, knock on wood. But we'll see. Hopefully this is not a trend with this whole internet dropping thing. So anyway, so that's why we're on a Wednesday night, and you're probably listening to this on Thursday. Hopefully all of my news ain't stale. But there's, you know, the great thing about doing midweek shows is that there's always a lot of stuff to talk about. I didn't really troll the wires for injury report right now, injury information. If you want to talk a little bit about injuries, or you want to read a little bit about injuries, you can check out my Bleacher Report article. And, of course, any of you who are Football Guys subscribers can check out my Fantasy Triage article, where I go over a lot of different guys who are banged up right now. Of course, I'll be also doing my NFL picks a little bit later on as well. And actually, I just opened up ESPN.com so I could get the schedule out and take a look at it, you know, have it set up so I don't have to annoy you people with some fumbling clicking in the background. And there is a video conversation with Carson Palmer, and holy crap, that dude looks red. Like, I don't know if he was out in the sun too much, like he was just too used to being in Cincinnati, and now he's in Oakland, and he was out in the sunshine and burned himself, but it's not good. Somebody get the man some makeup. Anyway, so we will talk about all things football. It's going to be wall-to-wall football, and let's just start with, I don't know, what I think is a pretty interesting choice in terms of the NFL. Officials are going to be asked to look for concussions. All right, let's just start. I mean, the same place. We've had this discussion before. Aaron and I have had this discussion when he's helped me launch this early on in the preseason. You can't do enough, really, to get to the point where you can identify and prevent concussions. But, you know, being able to identify when someone's gotten their bell rung, super important, right? So they definitely, they're working on finding ways to identify concussions during the game. They know there needs to be some more work to be done. Awesome. Why put it in the hands of officials? That's my question for you right now. They've decided they're going to have officials look for concussions. You keep your eyes open is what they told them. Okay. Let's go for the cheap humor first. These guys have problems determining whether something's a catch or not. These guys have issues. I mean, they're already going to have to monitor intent with hits, with other things. They've got a ton going on, right? And some of these guys are great, and some of these guys, I mean, it feels like this season, as much as any other season, we've had a ton of very, very questionable calls. So now what we're doing is saying, hey, officials, let's do this. Why don't you guys, on top of trying to, you know, make sure Tom Brady doesn't hurt himself, you know, doesn't get a hangnail because somebody hits him, on top of making sure Sanchez gets his hot dogs, on top of making sure that James Harrison is flagged and fined for everything he does, on top of all the stuff you do very well as it is, also keep an eye out for concussions. Now, and this is a quote, because the NFL Injury and Safety Panel met in New York on Tuesday to talk about a lot of stuff, and they basically said, and this is from a statement released to the media from the league, our game officials will receive concussion awareness training and will remain alert to possible concussions during games. I'm not even sure where to start. I mean, these guys are not going to get medical training. They're going to get training to look for what may be a concussion. I understand why, and I don't know that I particularly trust teams to be honest about, you know, whether their guys are hurt or not. But honestly, guys, really? We're going to take a completely subjective process here with the officials. They're going to be trying to really determine whether this guy has a concussion or not. And I know that to some extent there are simple tests to do it, but the fact that we're at a point where those simple tests don't necessarily help us now, I don't really know that I want an official stopping and going, how many fingers do I hold up? Like, you know, what day is it? What's the capital of New Mexico? Like, whatever the tests are, do we really need to put this on them? If anything, and maybe this is too Democrat for you Republicans out there, but create a new position that's like concussion ref or something like that, and have him or her, you know, keep an eye out for concussion injuries. But I don't know how you determine whether a guy had his bell rung in a way that he's going to have concussions. I mean, they've got a ton of stuff going on as it is. And, I mean, how can they watch, was it 22 players all at once? Well, I mean, even beyond that, just all of the teams, because guys come in and out. So it's not even just watching one set of players. So you have guys coming in and out of the game. So they have to monitor all that and the action on the field. I think it's too much. I think it's not going to be effective. I mean, it's an idea. It is a good concept, but I don't think that it's something that's going to work. I think you could have a concussion official, a safety ref, something like that. I don't know where they, you know, they could sit somewhere where they can see the all 22, or they could watch a combination of monitors and look for hits that may cause concussion, something like that. And then, you know, flag something when they feel like they need to, you know, say, hey, Tom Brady's, you know, talking to a fence post. Maybe we should check him out. You know, hey, look at that. Greg Jennings is walking in circles and talking to a flower. Maybe we should have a neurologist talk to him. You know, something. I just think that trying to get the guys on the field to do this is wrongheaded from the standpoint that it's just there's too much. There's too much that they're trying to do at any given time. I mean, how long? I just go back to the fact that these guys, you know, no offense to officials because they do a hell of a job on a, you know, not even for most of the, for some of these guys, I don't know most anymore, but it's not a full-time job. So I think you're just asking them to do way too much. And I think that it's a nice idea, but you need to have someone independent, and then you need to have a professional, you know, maybe the concussion official is a neurologist or is a doctor of some sort, or maybe they work with a doctor or something. I just think trying to hand it to the refs is just a bad idea. And I can joke all I want about messing up the calls, but the fact of the matter is those guys have enough to do. They can't be effective at both. I think you're going to have problems. I think you're going to have enraged players and coaches when they start yanking guys and they're wrong. So that's my opinion on that. Officials being asked to look for concussions. Just, you know, just keep a heads up. Just in case. You know, if an official believes a player may have suffered a concussion, he should take the appropriate steps to alert the team and get medical attention for the player. Frankly, if the teams aren't doing this on their own right now, how effective do you think this is going to be? Hey, I think this guy has a concussion. You should have the doctor look at him. Oh, the doctor looked at him. He's fine. Like, is that how that conversation is going to go? I don't know, there's a lot of little flaws in this. We'll have to see how that works out. You know, again, I really don't have a problem with them trying to increase player safety. I do go back to the same thing. I mean, this is a drum I have beaten don't know, since I've done the show, before I did the show when I was doing the Thundering Blurb podcast, any time that I've been on any radio show and we've talked about concussions, listen, you start with the equipment. I know that we're busy finding hits on, undefended players or at-risk players, whatever the hell the term is, which is skipping my mind right now because it's mush. But I know we're trying to make sure that defensive players are safe and okay, and that's great. I mean, we could talk about whether it changes the nature of the game, and we will, because that's a debate that's never going to be settled. But ultimately, in my mind, this has to start with the equipment. It has to start with the equipment. Better helmets from better material, mouth guards for guys. Hey, listen, my son's playing junior peewee football. Everybody has to have a mouth guard in. Every single person. It doesn't destroy the play. You know, Mark Sanchez has a mouth guard in. He audibles. Guys wear them. And with the money the NFL has, I'm pretty sure that they could design one that's not going to interfere with calling an audible or basic conversation. But just from what I've read, just a mouth guard will cut down on concussions, right? There are better helmets. There are guys who have gotten specially made helmets now to help them resist concussions. I mean, it seems to me that helmets are made, the NFL helmets are made pretty much the same way that defense contracts are made sometimes, which is the lowest common bidder, or the lowest bidder, lowest common denominator is what you get, is really what I was driving at, which is why that slipped in there. There has got to be a way to make a safer helmet. There's got to be a way to make it safer for the guys via equipment. And it's not the end-all be-all. It's not the only solution, all right? Having someone launch head first into another guy's head is unexcusable and can't happen. But there are basic things that can help protect any player. And the fact of the matter is there are plenty of concussions that happen that are not dirty hits. And James Harrison's not everywhere. I'm joking. I actually happen to like James Harrison. I think it's unfortunate that he has gotten himself in a position where he's being singled out. Him and Dominican Sue. And by the way, I mean, as long as we're kind of touching on this, I thought it was interesting. There was an article on ProFootballTalk.com that it was a tactical error for Goodell and the league to meet with Dominican Sue. The idea is that the big, loud players are going to get the attention. And also that you have a lot of players who seem to need to be explained what the rules are for, not getting themselves fined. And the rules are really simple to some extent. Mike Florio was saying in the article he felt like the rules were very simple. The thing is, the rules are also somewhat based on conjecture. I mean, Sue got fined for a hit that, as far as I know, nobody I know thinks it was dirty. I think it was last year. And yet, he's definitely been fined for some hits that were very questionable. But I think there is sort of a question mark. I think there is a gray area. I don't totally agree with Florio on that. I don't think it's completely black and white. I saw a penalty in the USC Stanford game last weekend, which was a fantastic game. And by the way, if you're an armchair scout, or you're someone whose team might be in the race for Luck and or Barkley, and if you want to vote on the worst team in the NFL, check out my From the Press Box article, and you can put your vote in the comments. Remember, a bad record is not everything, but it sure as hell helps. Anyway, so the Trojans are defending, Stanford is driving, and, Luck, after a brutal pick six, by the way, brings his team back and is driving down the field. Now, across the middle goes the receiver, and he gets hit by a USC defender. I can't remember if it was a safety or the corner. Pretty big hit. And kid didn't really launch himself, but he's in process. He was aiming for the chest, and the receiver ducked. The receiver, like, came down. Now, I don't know that the receiver was ducking the hit. He might have just been coming down off of the ball. He missed the ball. It wasn't a catch. USC gets flagged for a pass interference penalty, 15-yarder, I think. And, you know, Stanford goes from a third down position to being first down. And, of course, they drive down. They tie the game. It goes into triple overtime. And USC fumbles it away on the one in the third overtime. But I digress. That hit is a perfect example of a judgment call by a ref. And I can almost guarantee that it's one of those things where the fine could go either way. That did he make contact, you know, with his helmet on the defensive player? Yes. Did the wide receiver duck into the defender? Yeah, kind of looked that way. And that's the big problem. This is a subjective process. And you need, I mean, like I said, Florio kind of says it's black and white. There are questions. And this is, yet again, you know, I feel like I'm saying this a lot already tonight. We're only 20 minutes in. The fact of the matter is, kids, that from jump, they should have involved current and former players, as well as coaches, as well as doctors, should have put a group together to examine this. They have not. They didn't do it. They still haven't done it. I'm telling you, bring in Dominican Sue. Bring in James Harrison. Bring in Tom Brady. Bring in players who this impacts. There are offensive players who thinks that at this point, you know, the league might as well put flags on people. There are, you know, are defensive players who lose their mind over this. You know, certainly, like I've said, you know, we're talking about safety. Safety is important. It can be safer. You don't need to neuter the game. You need to be consistent about it. You need to have hard and fast rules. And to some extent, we have them. But to some extent, also, it's a little bit black. It's a little bit less black and white than it should be. And I'm sure that players have questions about what they can and can't do. And so Pro Football Talk was saying that this was sort of a tactical error because you're admitting that things are more complex than they really should be. That players aren't as informed as they should be. I don't know that I completely agree with that. I mean, the fact of the matter is that, as I said, there are gray areas to this. And again, if you want the players to buy into this new regime and to this rule and all of that, you need to involve them. Like I said, I've been saying this for months. I've been saying this for a year. I don't know why the NFL has not done this yet. It is baffling. I mean, maybe they just don't want a lot of debate about it, but frankly, at the end of the day, I think there's debate anyway. If you want to involve someone, you want them invested in what you're doing, if you want a change to happen, I mean, it's very simple. If you want change to happen, you want change A to happen. In order for change A to happen, these people here, you can't see me pointing in a direction because this is radio, not TV. These people here need to embrace that change. In order to do that, they need to be enthusiastic. In order to be enthusiastic, the best way to get them enthusiastic is to have them have a stake in it. The way you get someone to have a stake in something is to have them help you build it. I think it's that simple. I think we would have so many less "I hate Roger Goodell" conversations with players right now. I think there would be so much less bitterness if the players were some way, shape, or form heavily involved in this. I don't know why the NFLPA didn't try and get this. I mean, maybe they did. But try and get this done with the bargaining agreement, the CBA. Seems like a natural thing to me. And yet here we are. So we'll see. I think that the ideas sound like having someone try and monitor what is going on in a way that maybe polices the teams a little bit. I just don't think asking the officials to do this is really the right way to go. So moving on to our next piece of business. Santonio Holmes of the New York Jets. Well, it's been reported that he hasn't been that happy with his offense. And I can't say that I'm really surprised by that, because for a guy who just got a massive contract, Santonio Holmes is woefully underused. He is not a guy who is really being utilized the way he has been in the past. I don't know if it's the change in offense they're doing. I don't know if it's just too many personnel changes. I really don't know. Now, those of you who have listened to the show or read my stuff or any number of things know that I have some issues with Brian Schottenheimer's play calling. I definitely am not, I don't know, I could be more enthusiastic about it. But Holmes right now, 311 yards, 22 receptions, 3 touchdowns. I mean, if you look at what he did for the Jets last year in an abbreviated season, and he's halfway there right now, but it's taken him too long to do it. The Jets have not been using a lot. He's a guy who has this tremendous ability to make something out of nothing, to blow up a play, to add on yards after a catch, and yet the Jets are not getting him the ball. Plaxico Burress has taken like 2 months to get to the point where he's a consistent, not even a consistent target, but just a guy who can be utilized in such a way to where he's useful. I don't understand. You get rid of Edwards. You get rid of Jericho Cotri. The thought is that you're going to lean on guys like Santonio Holmes and Dustin Keller, and yet they don't do it. They're not getting either of those guys the ball. Now, Keller gets targeted more frequently, but Holmes, I don't know how you don't try and feed him the ball like 1 out of every 4 passes. I mean, who is going to be the guy who's going to be able to break those really huge plays? Not going to be Burress. His route running is crap. And he's not fast. I mean, he's never been speedy. He's not fast now. Could be Jeremy Curley. Now, I talked a lot about him in the preseason and after the draft. And I am excited by this kid. I think dumping Mason for him was a great idea for the Jets. He has definitely got that sort of explosive big play ability. He's a dynamic returner. He can do great things with the ball in his hands, but he's a rookie and he's a little bit raw still. So really you're just left with guys like Dustin Keller, who's not getting the ball enough to be consistent, and Holmes. But Holmes isn't getting the ball all that much. So I don't know what the Jets are doing. Neither does Holmes, really. And, you know, honestly, he was confronted today by a guy I know over at the Daily News, Manish Mehta, who asked basically about the report that he isn't happy with his role in the offense. And he said, I never heard that one. Next question. I didn't talk to anybody about it. Never heard about it. He's complained. He's called out the offensive line. He's complained in ways that are not direct, which actually makes him very New York, in my opinion. I mean, New Yorkers can be very direct, but there are times when New Yorkers are also sort of passive-aggressive in a weird sort of way you wouldn't expect New Yorkers to be. And Holmes is definitely like that, complaining about other things, hoping to draw attention to the one thing he's really upset about. It. He has not been doing very well, in part because he's not getting anything. You've got to figure that he's not happy. You know, he got in trouble last month, because he was complaining. He was complaining about the offense. Like I said, he was complaining about the offensive line. Derek Mason got shipped out for complaining. Although Mason, to be honest, sounded like a jackass in his complaints. It's not that he was particularly wrong. It's that he was pretty presumptuous for a dude who'd been there for 2 months and really wasn't doing all that much. They were feeding him the ball at times, and he wasn't doing a damn thing with it. It wasn't reliable. So maybe Holmes got the message that, hey, you know what, Santonio? Shut up. Shut up and do your job. The problem is the Jets are not allowing him to do his job. The Jets are on the cusp of falling too far behind in the AFC East to make the wild card, much less the division title. The Bills are far better than we expected them to be, and the Patriots are the Patriots. Cincinnati's making a push for a wild card. You got to figure Baltimore or the Steelers is going to get one of the wild cards. Only the division winner is coming out of the AFC West. And probably only the division winner is coming out of the AFC South, although Tennessee could make a strong argument if Texas gets that division. It's going to be hard for the Jets to make the postseason this year if they cannot get their crap together. And if they're going to be effective offensively, they need to start feeding Santonio Holmes the ball. So maybe he's not complaining out in the press, but I hope, if I can put my Jets hat on for a minute, I hope that he's complaining privately. Maybe not haranguing, but like pointing out how much he did last year and how little they're asking him to do right now. The Jets want to maybe make the playoffs. They got to start getting Santonio Holmes the ball. They need to start being more creative with the offensive play calling. And they need to get it together. Side question here. Is Mark Sanchez the future of that position in New York? I've talked about this before. I will continue to talk about it. Sanchez shows phenomenal ability sometimes and atrocious decisions others. Coming off the bye now, usually the Jets do not win coming off the bye. It's up to Rex Ryan and Mark Sanchez to lead the way in order for that to change. So we're going to move on to the Minnesota Vikings, who are moving to Los Angeles. Oh, I'm sorry. No, that hasn't been announced yet. However, there is a big stadium proposal that was going to be voted on. Apparently, the government has shot down the idea that a stadium partner is going to be able to impose a special sales tax without a public vote. And you and I both know that there is no way in hell that Minnesota is passing a sales tax if it goes to a vote. And legislative leaders are resisting a special session scheduled for later this month, which was supposed to settle it all out. They definitely, I mean, Minnesota has come forward and tried very hard to sort of make things attractive Minnesota to the Vikings staying in Minnesota. But it's not as good as it could be. And there are definitely some really big question marks. There are only 60 days remaining on the team's lease in the Metrodome, also known as the only fully convertible stadium in the world. I am, of course, referring to the fantastic collapse of the dome last year, which we can only laugh about because nobody got hurt. Like, you don't see us making fun of the Jerry World dome falling down, the practice dome that collapsed last year on the Cowboys. We don't want to make fun of it because people really got hurt. However, no one got hurt when the snow collapsed Minnesota. And I will ask once again, who in the hell designs a dome in Minnesota that is basically held up mostly by air pressure? Because it snows in Minnesota. I'm surprised this hasn't happened every year. But I digress. So soon enough, the lease is going to be done at the Metrodome. And there is not going to be a new lease. If there's a new stadium, they may do like a sublease or a short lease because the stadium needs to be built. But there ain't going to be a long-term lease in the Metrodome. It's just not going to happen. The team is threatening to move, and the state is almost at the point where they're like, okay, calling their bluff. I go back to something. Wow. Once again, I feel like I've said this a lot tonight. I go back to something that I've said more than once. The owners were crying poor. The owners wanted some more money. The owners got more money in the CBA. Stop asking me for public money. I'm sorry. You can privately finance a stadium. It's been done. Everybody talks about how do the owners take all the risk. No, taxpayers take the risk. In an awful lot of these situations, it's the taxpayers who pay for most of these stadiums. And for every good deal that the taxpayers get, there are numerous bad deals. And this isn't just football. This is almost any stadium. I remember, and I'm going to talk like I'm an old man for a minute, but I remember back in, like 93. At some point, those of you who don't follow hockey, I apologize, but at some point there was a team called the Quebec Nordiques. And I know this in part because I was a huge hockey fan, and my roommate, his parents were Quebecois, so he was a huge Quebec fan. And at some point, the Nordiques said, we need a new stadium or we're moving. And Quebec said, we need schools, we need hospitals, we need a lot of other public stuff. We're not paying for a stadium move. And so the Nordiques did. And then won a championship in Colorado because they became the Avalanche and they won right after they moved. I remember people, I can't believe Quebec's doing that. Well, it's Canada. Well, that's how you explain that. Well, now it's pretty common for public money to be like, no. Taxpayers don't want to pay for a stadium. Hell, taxpayers didn't want to pay for a Los Angeles Lakers championship parade a couple years ago. Money's tight, kids. Minnesota is hit as hard as anywhere else. Having your hand out, asking for money, to me, is unconscionable. And I don't use that word very much because I like to leave it for the impact. Unconscionable. I say Minnesota, listen, put it up for a referendum, and if you guys want to vote for it in Minnesota, fine. I'm not saying you're idiots for it. I just think that having your hand out when you own an NFL franchise is asking a little bit much. And demanding money and threatening to move is a lot much. And it could be. Minnesota Vikings could end up in Los Angeles. Would it shock you? No, it shouldn't. It shouldn't shock you. The NFL wants a team in Los Angeles again. There are two very good stadium proposals in LA right now. And honestly, either one or both could go. The NFL is not going to expand. They don't want more teams. So it's going to be teams moving. Would it shock you if in like 2 or 3 years, the Chargers and the Vikings are in Los Angeles? Because it shouldn't. If this proposal collapses in Minnesota, I'm not going to say it's a certainty, but it's pretty damn close. As a former Los Angelino, I hate to see an NFL franchise taken from another state or another city ending up in Los Angeles. And mind you, I love football. You guys know that. In Los Angeles, I missed having a pro team after the Raiders and Rams left. I missed it. Especially since they moved for reasons other than you don't have enough fans. Honestly, though, if this is the way it's going to go, it's the way it's going to go. I hate to steal a team. I mean, I'm not in Los Angeles now, so I'm not the one stealing. I hate to steal a team, or I hate to see a team stolen. But at some point, I think Minnesota is right to call their bluff. I don't want to see the Vikings leave, but if Minnesota doesn't have the money, they don't have the money. Threatening to take your ball and go home. I don't know. That's really not going to help anything, is it? I don't think so. Moving on. So, you're the Washington Redskins. You get beat up by the Buffalo Bills. John Beck gets sacked 9 times. You finish the game. You take your pads off. It's mice on your bruises. Move on. Start looking to the next game. And then you get sacked again. Yes, folks, somehow the Buffalo Bills, even now, are sacking the Redskins. The Bills notched their 10th sack 3 days after the game. They were credited with 9 sacks on Sunday, but the Elias Sports Bureau reviewed the tape and determined that one play that had been called a running play for Beck should have been credited as a sack. It's for Nick Barnett and Danny Batten, each half a sack. That's the most sacks, 10, the Redskins have ever given up in one game. Awesome. You know, that's just salt in the wound, isn't it, kids? Insult to injury. Sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug, sometimes you're John Beck who gets sacked after the game is over. The Redskins, folks, are falling apart as we speak. Remember that hot start they had? Yeah, they cooled off. Talk about a momentum killer. You know, here's the interesting thing. You wonder if the momentum shifted from NFC to AFC. The Redskins started off hot. The Kansas City Chiefs started off very cold. And now the Todd Haley hobos are playing very good football, or at least good enough football to win games. And the Washington Redskins can't get out of their own way. And they've gone to John Beck as their quarterback. Rex Grossman had a hard time. He was under duress a lot. Threw some picks, was sacked a lot. Beck's not getting the ball out fast enough. He's getting sacked a lot. Maybe the problem isn't your quarterback or only your quarterback. Maybe the problem is you're not very good and your offensive line sucks. Just a thought. Congratulations, Bills. Keep sacking John Beck all week long. Before we get to our picks, I got two more stories to talk over real quick. Fred Jackson and Matt Forte have something in common, and that is that they do not have contracts as we speak. Fred Jackson, who is a guy nobody really thought was going to amount to much. One of the most underappreciated running backs in the league, even by his own fans. And he's been getting assurances from the Bills that he will indeed get a nice fat contract in the offseason. Just hang in there, Fred. Which kind of works up until you remember guys like Leon Washington who were giving assurances, then blew out his leg, or actually broke his leg, and then was cut for his trouble. But at least he's got assurances. Matt Forte is not even getting those. And he's claiming that they're just kind of grinding him down in Chicago. They're just going to use him up until he's gone. That wouldn't shock me. First of all, the Bears are not the most generous organization on the planet. Second of all, they think they have a shot at winning now. If that's the case, they're just going to ride their hot hand. Their entire offense is Forte. To me, if your entire offense is Matt Forte, then you probably should pay Matt Forte. But I'm just crazy that way. I like to keep my star players happy. Doesn't mean that I'm going to back up a Brinks truck for the guy and just, you know, hand feed him thin mints for the rest of his life. But I think a good contract is probably warranted at this point. That man's done the Lord's work behind another atrocious O-line. You know, Washington's O-line's got problems. Yeah, Chicago's O-line invented problems. They play better off and on. They've kept Grossman. Suddenly I'm in the Wayback Machine. They've kept Cutler standing upright, kind of most of the time. Mike March isn't getting him totally killed yet. Matt Forte is pretty much the reason the ball moves. They've got some decent but not great wide receivers. They've got Cutler's just all over the place sometimes. Sometimes he's great, sometimes he's not. Matt Forte is the guy. You know, it's interesting to me that Fred Jackson has other weapons around him that are better quality. And who knew that I'd be saying that? But better quality than what Forte has. He's got a better offensive line. He's got, I don't know, you could wash the quarterback, I guess. Fitzpatrick's playing incredibly well. Cutler is a better athlete, but I don't know that you could say he's a better quarterback. Stevie Johnson's better than any of the wide receivers they have. maybe all of the wide receivers all at once that they have in Chicago. It'll be interesting to see who gets signed first. Nothing like a disgruntled running back, by the way. Hopefully it doesn't turn into holdout city, because we're watching Chris Johnson implode before our very eyes, in part because he missed all of training camp as well as all the offseason because of the lockout. Hopefully Fred Jackson and Matt Forte will learn from that and try and get something done, and if not, not hold out. I understand why somebody holds out. I don't necessarily hate the practice. I just think in order to be effective and healthy throughout the season, you need training camp. We'll see if this gets done. It's all right. At this point, I don't think that my interview is going to happen right now. So I'm just going to launch into my my Tebow story here. Now, I said in from the press box that I'd talk a little bit about Tebow, the quarterback. And the simple fact of the matter is, he's not very good right now. This should not come as a shock to anyone. Am I pronouncing him dead on arrival? No. Because ultimately, it's way too early. But here's a guy whose mechanics are a mess in a different way almost every time he drops back to pass. All right, this is to say that ultimately, this guy does something wrong differently in new ways every time he takes a snap. Alternately has, you know, shows a great arm, but can't get the ball out quick enough a lot of the times. Pulls down the ball a little too quick, makes bad decisions. He's basically a holier version of Mark Sanchez, but with better running ability. So Tebow's struggling right now. He's having a real hard time. Now, I had an opportunity to ask one Cecil Lammy, insider for the Ticket in Denver, 102.3 The Ticket, and fellow football guy. And I asked him, you know, is there a point where John Fox is going to pull the plug on the Tebow experiment? And Cecil said, you know, Tebow has to improve. He's got to find ways to improve. However, he doesn't see Fox making a change. Because you can't really go back to Orton, and you're not going to put Brady Quinn in. So my opinion is, if you came to a point where you thought you had a shot at a run at the playoffs or something, then you do put Orton in. He's a more consistent, more complete quarterback right now. The problem is that with Orton, you're just not going to win close games. Meanwhile, the problem with Tebow is that you may not be in close games with him. You're at the point right now where you almost need to sort of write the season off. Of course, I said when they named Tebow starter that you've already written this season off before Tebow got there. John Fox and John Elway need to know whether Tebow is the guy. Keeping him in there is probably the best way to do that. I watch Tebow and I don't see the improvements that he needs to make week to week. They tried to spread the offense out this week. Maybe Detroit was just a bad person to do that with, or a bad team to do that against. With Sue and Fairley and that offense or that defensive line, maybe it's just too much. But the rest of the schedule ain't great. There are some good matchups, but Tebow's going to be challenged each and every week. Let's see how he handles it. I talked a little bit, and I'm going to touch on it really quickly, but I talked a little bit about this in From the Press Box, but the whole Tebowing thing, for those of you who don't know, it's a meme on the internet. You can look it up. Google it, kids. But basically, Tebow will genuflect when whatever else is going on around him, you know, praying. And people have been mocking it. The Lions kind of mocked it. A lot of people on the interwebs is mocking it. Listen, I'll just bring this really quick. You can go and read the column. I urge you to. But ultimately, yes, I do wonder whether if he was Muslim or Jewish or any, you know, if the outcry would be, if these jokes would even get made. The problem is that you're a public figure. And as a public figure, you are going to get criticism. And that criticism is sometimes going to be fair and sometimes not fair. And sometimes it's going to hit close to home. And I think we're just very sensitive when it comes to religion. But Tebow signed on to be a big-time quarterback. He's a very well-known media figure. He's going to get criticism. Sometimes it's going to be really mean. And let me tell you, there's worse things than anything anybody has said to Tebow said on the field. Worse things every day. So if anybody thinks Tebow's going to be offended by that, man, I hope not, because he's going to hear much worse if he hasn't already. But putting that aside, as a public figure, you run the risk of being mocked. Public domain, kids. That's kind of how that works. You put it out there. It is open for debate. It's open for satire. You can ask, hey, if this guy was Muslim, would we be making this joke? And my response in some ways is, why shouldn't we make this joke just because it's Tim Tebow? Why does Tebow get special treatment on this? Like, there are people ripped up Steve Johnson with the Bills when he was angry at God because he dropped the pass. People killed him. I didn't hear people defending him. Why are you making fun of Steve Johnson? Why are you making fun of him because he's a Christian? I think the other thing about Tebow is he's getting backlash that generally it belongs to the religious right, not Tebow. Tebow's just sort of the visible person right now. There's a lot of anger in terms of, you know, the Republican Party, especially the way they've sort of hijacked Christianity in some people's minds. I'm not going to get into a political debate about it with you. But it could be that this is a backlash at Tebow. I mean, he's really overhyped. His acolytes are fanatical. The hate about him is fanatical. Sort of a perfect storm of angst for a lot of people. I don't think it bothers him. It doesn't bother me. I understand why it bothers some. But I'm saying, get over it. I understand it. But I think just let it go. If Tebow has an issue with it, he can say something. But he signed on for this. By being out there, wearing your heart on your sleeve about any subject, you are going to get criticism. That's what's happening now. I kind of think at this point, complaining about it, and I'm not saying Tebow is, but other people are, but complaining about it is not really going to improve anything. That's my take on that. Tebow, the football player, we'll find out over the next 5-6 weeks how that works. It'll be interesting. It'll definitely be interesting. I kind of look forward to looking at the Tebow games after the season in all of my copious amount of free times while I'm doing draft analysis and seeing what little things he did differently each week and what worked and what didn't and what improved. So let's move on to our picks of the week. Week. I don't have an echo, sorry. I continue to forget to double-check myself each week after the fact, and I should probably write these down, so I'm going to kind of do that while we talk. So if you hear scribbling, that's what that is. We start off with the Bills and the Jets. The Bills are away. They have not won a game away from home. The Jets are away. They have not won a game away from home. The Bills are home and have not lost a game at home. The Jets never win coming off of a bye. The Jets are desperate for a win. This, for me, is difficult because I do think that with Darrell Revis, who has allowed 10 catches and no touchdowns so far, and Antonio Cromartie, who gets more flags than anyone else in the world but has played pretty well overall, I do think they can shut the Bills' passing game down. The question is, can they stop Fred Jackson? On the other side of the ball, I don't think the Bills' defense is so good that Sanchez can't throw on them. But they have such a conservative game plan that quite often the Jets don't move the ball. This particular time, I think they buck all of the trends and the Jets win this game. I think it's going to be very close, but I think they come away with the victory. Next up, Seahawks-Cowboys. Seahawks excuse me, 1-3 away, 2-5 overall. Cowboys 3-4. These are not good teams, folks. They're a very stingy run defense with the Seahawks. Cowboys may or may not have Felix Jones back. They've got Jason Witten. Last week, for some reason, Dez Bryant, Miles Austin, not factors. That definitely changes this week. As much as I think the Seahawks will be able to stuff the run game, it's not going to be able to stop everything. I think Romo has a good day. I'm calling Dallas here. Not in a runaway, but I think it's going to be a pretty solid victory for them. Falcons, Colts. Do I really need to actually talk about this? Probably just because the Falcons have played down to the level of their competition a few times. But they should be able to pound the heck out of the Colts. So I'm going with the Falcons. I'm going with the road dog. Dolphins at the Chiefs. Dolphins 0-7, 0-4 away from home. The Chiefs 4-3. Like I said, an amazing turnaround for them. 2-1 at home. Dolphins are not a very good team. The Chiefs are not a great team. Ultimately, though, I don't think the Dolphins can pull this out. They will continue to be offers. I think the Chiefs win at home here. Not a problem. If you are a Dolphin fan, you have my sympathies. Up next, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers visit the New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints have not lost at home yet this season. The Buccaneers are 1-1 on the road. Josh Freeman's had a lot of problems, and I got a question from someone today in the email that I have to respond to. Do I think Mike Williams is going to get back on the good foot at some point? Here's the thing about Mike Williams. I think he's a very good player. I think Josh Freeman's having a lot of problems, and that's what's killing Mike Williams for the most part. I think this is going to be a LeGarrette Blount game. If he is healthy, they're going to run the ball a lot, try and keep the Brees offense off the field. Now, that's not going to work all that well, and Drew Brees can pretty much score in like half a second. He's got the wide receivers. I think that you can run on Tampa Bay. Unfortunately for the Bucs, as much as I like them, I don't think it gets any better this week. I am going with the Saints. 49ers at Redskins. Two teams going in completely different directions. The 49ers, a surprising 6-1, 3-0 win on the road. Excuse me. And full control of the NFC West. The Redskins, once in control of the NFC East, now collapsing. Horribly, horribly, horribly collapsing with John Beck. I think the 49ers are going to pound the crap out of the Redskins offensive line. Make John Beck cry. The running game is a bad thing for the Redskins. The Niners have Gore. The Niners' defense is good. I don't like the Washington Redskins at all in this. 49ers continue to lock up that NFC West. The Redskins continue to fall behind the Giants in the East. Browns at Texans. This is definitely a Texans win. Andre Johnson or no Andre Johnson. It's going to be an Arian Foster type of day with sprinkled showers of Owen Daniels and Matt Schaub. I'll see Ben Tate do pretty well. Question for the Browns is whether Hillis will be back or not. If Hillis is back, I think they can make a run for it. But the guys they have replacing him, if he's out, yeah, they're not all that great. So I think it's going to be a very long day for Colt McCoy and the Browns. And like I said, I'm taking the Texans. Bengals at Titans, a very interesting game right now. 5-2 Bengals, they have lost 1 away, 1-3. The Titans have lost 1 at home and 1-3. They are 4-3. Teams that are fighting for that wild card spot already. This could be a very big game down the stretch. Both of these teams are going to want it. The Titans defense has been playing relatively well. Matt Hasselbeck far better than he has ever been. The Bengals, Andy Dalton playing above where I expected him to be right now. Again, I'm still waiting for the cold weather and the wind to kick in Cincy. But for now, he's looking very good. AJ Green looking very, very good. Both of them make some bad errors, but overall they play pretty well. Cedric Benson comes back. Expect him to run the ball quite a bit. Chris Johnson. I mean, how bad is this guy at this point? When does Javon Ringer start getting more carries? I think pretty soon. I don't think the Titans are going to be able to stave off the Bengals. I think the Bengals defense is going to shut down this Titans offense. So I am going with Cincinnati Bengals, who are mean and angry. Broncos at Raiders. You know, I really want that 8-8 thing to happen. Those of you who listen to Aaron and I, when we started this podcast, we made a bet. I said that the Broncos would be 8-8, and Aaron said that they would have no more than, I think, 6 wins. Fact of the matter is, I can't see the Raiders losing this game. I can see the Raiders losing this game. I just don't think it's going to happen. Tebow's going to continue to struggle, continue to have some issues. They got to make some sort of adjustments. I just don't know what those adjustments are going to be at this point. They changed the offense for him. It didn't work out. The Raiders get Carson Palmer. Now, the big question is whether the Broncos can get the Palmer. No McFadden in all likelihood, but Michael Bush and Tywan Jones will more than make up for it. I think the Raiders at home are going to be very tough for this Broncos team to beat. And by the way, you know how I said that probably Tim Tebow has heard some horrific things worse than being Tebowed and the genuflecting thing? Yeah, if he hasn't already, he will by the time he leaves the black hole. New York Giants at the Pats. I would really like to predict the Patriots loss, but I'll tell you what, the Giants, not as good as their 5-2 record. They have struggled. Bradshaw is hurt. I don't even know if he's going to play at this point. Nick should play. Manning, he's been playing better, but he's very, very up and down. The secondary can be attacked here for the Patriots, so Manning could possibly pick it apart. The question is that who will make the big defensive play? Will it be the Giants or will it be the Pats? And you know what? I started out this little section thinking I was going to pick the Pats, but I'm actually going to pick the Giants. I think the Giants will be able to pull this out, even without Bradshaw. I think Brandon Jacobs coming back will be a boon to them. I think Mario Manningham steps up. I think Victor Cruz steps up if Nix is there. You know what? This secondary is way too vulnerable. I think that it could be two drops in a row for the Patriots, put them at 5-3, which would make things very interesting in the East. Rams at Cardinals, two very, very painfully bad teams. Kevin Cobb, not quite what you expected, was he, Cardinal fans? On the other hand, Sam Bradford's taking a real step back, but Bradford and Lloyd with Steven Jackson, I think it's too much for this Cardinals team. I'm taking the Rams. Another road dog for me. Chargers, Packers, this isn't, in my mind, even a question. Packers will be 8-0 when they leave San Diego. The Chargers are just a disaster, and I don't think Phillip Rivers going up against this secondary and this defensive line and front seven is really going to end well for them. Expect, there you go, a lot of Mike Tolbert with Ryan Matthews out, but the wide receiver core has been almost non-existent. I think it's just going to be very difficult for the Chargers to keep up with the Packers, so I'm going with the Pack as they continue their winning ways. Sunday Night Football, Ravens, Steelers. This is always a coin flip, and it's always a great one. I think defensively, the Steelers are going to be able to get at the Ravens and at Joe Flacco. They are home. They play strong when they're home. They have not lost a game yet. They're 4-0. The Ravens have problems on the road. Flacco's been very up and down. Rice has been a little bit up and down. I think that the Steelers were able to shut the Ravens down, so I'm going with Pittsburgh on this. And not last and not least, a very interesting game. The Bears 4-3 against the Eagles 3-4. The Eagles have not been doing great at home, but the Bears don't play very well away. The Eagles have started to turn their season around. Is it enough? Is it too little too late? And can the Bears front seven get at Michael Vick and bottle up LeSean McCoy? Meanwhile, can Matt Forte essentially run this game into the ground? If Forte can be effective on the ground, I think the Bears can win this. Unfortunately for the Bears, I just think that the Eagles' defense is just good enough to step up. I think that Forte will be able to run the ball, but the thing is, you know, Vic and DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin and Brent Celek and LeSean McCoy, there's just too much power in the offense. I don't think the Bears are going to be able to keep up. I'm going with the Eagles, who continue their climb out of the basement. So there you have it, folks. Those are my picks for this week. We are a little bit over, so thank you for sticking with me here on the Hard Count. I will be back probably on Tuesday night next week again. I'm still threatening to do a video cast of this. I have no idea when that's going to happen because, you know, I have no free time anymore. I hope you had a great Halloween and a great weekend. Hope that you have a great weekend coming up. Enjoy the football this Sunday. And hey, watch a little college football. Tomorrow starts today, the NCAA. I'm Andrew Garda. Thank you for coming out. Thanks again for Aaron and Corey for letting me host this thing here. And thanks for all of the great support that I've gotten at CheeseheadTV.com so far. Again, you can catch my stuff there. You can catch it at footballguys.com for your fantasy needs, and you can catch my work at BleacherReport.com as well. Hope you guys have a good one. I will see you same bat time, same bat channel next week. Take it easy.
You've been listening to The Hard Count.
Let's go again!
With your host, Andrew Garda.
And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.